Hello, I'm Frank, creator and host of Empire's podcast, The Ottomans. Right now, folks, we are up to 57 followers on Spotify, and I have about 11 reviews on Apple Podcast. You can help grow this podcast by sharing it with a friend, leaving me a 5-star review on Apple Podcast, and dropping me a follow on the Spotify app. Thank you in advance, and if you would like to reach out, please shoot me an email at empiresofhistorypodcast@gmail.com. A Crusade Dies at Varna, Part 1, Episode 21. In Episode 20, we left the Ottomans in something of a lurch. Sultan Murad II had stepped down, voluntarily or not, in August of 1444, and his untested and strong-spirited son, Mehmed, became Sultan Mehmed II. I realized that I said in episode 20 that in this show we'd be covering the first reign of Mehmed II, the Crusade of Varna, and then the return of Murad II, and his subsequent death and final reign of Mehmed. However, after researching the Crusade of Varna, I've come to realize that this is simply too much ground for me to cover. Truth be told, a whole lot of important stuff happened between the defeat of the Crusaders, yes, spoiler alert, at Varna, and the first reign of Mehmed. It would be impossible to explain the context and motivations which faced the young Mehmed when he did finally take over for the second time in 1451, without us first stopping the bus and doing some sightseeing. First, we're going to take a detailed look at the Crusade of Varna, in this part one and a later part two. Then we're going to look at the first reign of Mehmed and the revolt that resulted from his attempts at reform, and also gave weight to the crafty old vizier Kandarli Hali Pasha that prompted him to recall Murad II from his retirement and make him reign for a second term. Simply put, if I tried to cram all this into a single episode, I wouldn't be doing history nor this show any favors. So part one it is. But don't worry, I'll be releasing both parts of the Crusade of Varna this week. So you should be listening to this on Tuesday, and then later this week on Friday, I'll be releasing part two, so you won't have to wait long. Another disclaimer I'd like to throw out there is that I've outlined a lot of very important stuff leading up to and actually causing the crusade back in episode 20. I also went into detail in that episode about the political situation facing the Ottomans and Christians during this time. So, if you haven't already, I'd invite you to check that episode out before heading any further into this crusade. With all this out of the way, and stepping into our time machine, we find the young Sultan Mehmed II in the capital of Ottoman Rumelia, Edirne. The date was September the 10th, 1444, and he was drafting a whole lot of stuff he wanted to reform. Meanwhile, up in Buda, the capital of Hungary, it had taken word of Murad's resignation about a week to spread all over Europe. Up in the king's business immediately was the papal legate we got to mention in episode 20, Cardinal Julian Cesarini the Elder. Born in 1398 in the city of Rome, he would meet his end, rallying the last of the crusading soldiers around the banner of St. Vladislav in 1444. If you recall from episode 20, he was the legate who had promised, in the name of the Pope, to absolve any crusader leadership for mortal sins if they swore what they knew to be a false oath before the Ottomans. Made a cardinal by Pope Martin V, Cesarini developed a reputation as a fierce intellectual, a great public debater, master orator, and preacher. His networks of friends and buddies were spread all through Europe, and it is said that he had a nest of spies in every court of royalty and cathedral. Ever the champion of crusading, Cesarini believed, very early on, that the Ottoman Empire was different than any threat faced by Christendom. Not since King Charles had managed to stop the Muslim invasion of Europe at Tours in 732, was a great victory needed for the Christian West. Unlike the parochial kings, dukes, barons, and lords of the Western kingdoms, Cesarini realized that the Ottomans weren't just plunderers and thieves and soldiers of fortune. They had defeated substantial Christian armies in the past. They were putting their rivals in Anatolia to flight, and they seemed to be dreaming dreams of an empire. If they weren't stopped in the Balkans, well, already the dreaded Akinci warriors had raided as far away as Germany. Cesarini, therefore, entered the Council of King Hungary and Poland in September of 1444, almost as soon as he'd heard that Sultan Murad II had resigned. Now was the time to strike. 10-year peace treaty be damned. Everyone had gotten cold feet when Murad went up to Ramilia from Bursa the year prior and built up a huge army. With swiftness and speed that has surprised everyone, the Ottomans had locked down Ramilia pretty efficiently against all rebellion. At the end of September, the Crusaders decamped and started to head south, directly into Ottoman territory. This crusading force was composed of an impressive representation of the various ethnic and linguistic groupings of European ancestry. Hungarians, Poles, Bohemians, Wallachians, Italians, Teutonic Knights, Czechs, Bosnians, Croats, Bulgarians, and so forth. Of special note were the 4,000 or so troops and cavalry under the Wallachian Vivold prince Vlad II, the father of the future world-famous vampire Vlad Dracula, whom were led by Vlad's older brother Mircea II. These horsemen from Wallachia stood out. They had long beards, top furry hats, long curved swords. They didn't wear very much armor, but they had fast horses. A naval force made up of Venetian and Genoese ships were placed under a capable commander with orders to patrol up and down the Dardanelles Straits and prevent Murad from crossing over from Anatolia with his army should Mehmed call upon him. The Crusaders' plan looked a bit like this. Keep the Dardanelles Straits under control and Murad bottled up in Anatolia. Then, with a force of around 20,000 Crusaders, they would decamp from Buda and march first south into Ottoman lands, then head east, aiming for the port city of Varna, in modern-day Bulgaria on the Black Sea coast. The idea was that marching through Ottoman lands would stir up the Christians languishing under the Ottoman yoke, grab a few forts, towns, and cities along the way, and smash any small Turkish war parties wandering around. Then, after having arrived at Varna, and if they hadn't met any substantial Ottoman army in the meantime, head directly south and take the city, and then the Venetians would swoop in and resupply the men with money and supplies. Once resupplied with additional troops and logistics, and holding the town of Varna, the crusading force would then strike directly at the Ottoman capital of Edirne. Marching on Edirne would force the Ottomans to fight, and with additional reinforcements, the Crusaders believed themselves that they had a great chance of winning. Once Edirne was captured, then the Ottomans might be rolled up for good in Europe. As a plan, it wasn't so bad either. The initial victories and the initiative of the offensive would stay with the Crusaders, meaning that they would be the ones to decide to fight, and the Ottomans would be forced to react to their every move. If the Ottomans did suffer a huge defeat, or if they lost Edirne, then the artifice in the Balkans could very likely collapse. As the Crusaders raised their wine glasses and toasted the Lord's coming victory over the infidel Turk, a few were slower to raise their glasses than others. Everyone looked around the room awkwardly at Vlad Dracula II, the ruler of Wallachia. His basic concern was that the Crusaders were simply too few in number to truly match an Ottoman army, and he had a point. 20 or 25,000 might seem like a lot of men, but these were Ottomans, you guys. And the Wallachian leader knew this because his country had been fighting them for well over 100 years. And he knew that the Sultan could easily put together an armory numbering some 50,000 to 80,000 men respectively. Hunyadi also spoke up at this critical moment, and he reminded everyone present of his earlier victories. Yes, he agreed the Ottomans could raise large armies, but they were ill-trained, poorly led, and lacked the ardor so common in the Crusader camp. Among the cheers to this statement, Vlad countered by reminding Hunyadi and those present that his victories came because he had fought the Ottomans in hilly and mountainous terrain, used his impressive battle wagons as fallback points, and that the army put together by a sultan was composed of dedicated warrior professionals. These would be veteran soldiers from all over the empire, not just your local yokels. Eventually, both Hunyadi and Vlad were joined by another leader, Brankovic, the despot of Serbia. What Brankovic basically said was that it was best to keep Serbia out of the fight altogether. He had been thinking to himself, on the one hand, if the Crusaders won and the Turks were pushed out of Europe, great. But then, what about Serbia? Things weren't so hot between the powers of Serbia and Hungary. And the Serbian leader suspected that Hungary was eyeing up Belgrade. Diplomacy, yes, was a better course of action if you were the leader of Serbia. After all, stated Brankovic, what if, just what if Murad returns when he hears the Crusaders broke the peace treaty? What if he makes it across the straits with 10,000 of his Janissaries, 30,000 Sapiha cavalry, and 40,000 of those Azov infantrymen from Anatolia? Failing to heed the, hey, let's stop and think about this, way the winds were now blowing, King Vladislav declared that each of them had taken solemn vows as crusaders and, as Cardinal Cesarini reminded them, if they had an opportunity to attack and expel the Turks, what wrath from God might they all warrant if they didn't act now? On September the 18th, 1444, the crusaders formed up ranks, 4 men abreast, and marched out of Buda. And by September the 22nd, they were in Ottoman territory. From about middle of September through the 1st of November, things went well for the Crusaders. Even though the going was tough, long marches, poor sleepless nights, and a dwindling food supply. But they did liberate towns, and by liberate, I mean they murdered and raped anything and everyone left alive after a siege, one by one, following the route of the Danube River. Back in Edirne, panic was setting in, and things were looking pretty bad. For the past 3 weeks, Sultan Mehmed had argued constantly with Kandarli Halia Pasha over this or that military reform that the young man wanted to implement. We will go more into this in the episode I'll be doing about Mehmed's first reign, but tensions between the old guard, the administrators and generals risen from the ranks of the Devşirme system, as well as the other ones that had come from Anatolia, had never been higher. While bickering in Edirne, news reached Kandarli and Mehmed of the Crusaders' treachery in breaking their vow. The feeling seemed to be one of genuine shock, as the Ottoman imperial court hadn't expected the Christians to break their vows. In the capital, panic was breaking out, and Muslim men and women and children began to flee the city for the Dardanelles to make it into Anatolia. This was costing the Ottoman treasury significant losses, as most of these refugees were powerful merchants and traders. And the government needed them if they were going to keep doing business. Among the trouble, Sultan Mehmed II ordered his army mustered immediately. However, by early October, a mere 10,000-man force had shown up. Made up of a small corps of Janissaries and Azab horsemen appeared. If it weren't clear to everyone, it surely was now, that the reason the Sultan couldn't muster the entire might of the empire was Kandarli. The old man didn't want Mehmed running at the head of a huge army. Not only could they lose another sultan in a fight, thereby plunging the empire into a civil war, but what exactly would Mehmed do with this large army? Come back to Edirne and put Kandarli and his small clique to the sword, so that Mehmed would have no one left to oppose his crazy ideas of taking Constantinople? Seeing that he had been outmaneuvered, and on so many levels humiliated, Sultan Mehmed did something incredible then. He decided to pen a letter to his dad. I'm going to sum up the letter basically as this. Look, Dad, you resigned and made me Sultan, so if I am really the Sultan and supreme ruler of the Ottoman Empire, I order you to return to Rumelia and pick up arms and lead our armies into battle. And if I am not the true Sultan, if you're still pulling the strings behind the scenes, then your presence is immediately required here before the Crusaders roll us all up into Turkish kebabs. It is said that Murad received his son's letter with a deep sigh. Not only had the Christians broken their vows, but the empire was facing its greatest existential threat since the Battle of Nicopolis. He had enjoyed himself in Bursa, well, what few weeks he had been allowed. He penned a letter back to his son, basically confirming his son as the Sultan, no, he was not pulling any strings behind the scenes, and that Kandarli was a wise old man he should listen to. And if Murad were to return to lead the armies, he would do so only with the simple rank of general, and this would be temporary at best, and he wanted to return in the humble spirit of the Ghazi warrior for Islam. Yes, a simple soldier, nothing less. He even let it be known he was passing up any treasures and booty that would come of the campaign. By the middle of October, the Crusaders were on their final leg approaching Varna. Murad had gathered his forces in Anatolia and was scratching his head on how to cross the straits. Mehmed was up in Edirne arguing with Kandarli and yelling at his Janissaries, who ignored his tantrums and even spitefully refused his orders. This is the point we shall stop off on The Crusade of Varna Part 1. Next episode, we're going to jump into the weeds of the actual battle, the defeat and consequences afterwards. Please stay around because I'm going to be releasing this coming Friday. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And if you would like, please leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and a follow on Spotify. It really helps. Thank you so much.